What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 383 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. I know we took a day off yesterday for the holiday, but good to be back this week. Got a lot of good content today. Got a great guest Friday coming up this week. I got an old friend of the pod coming back to talk some Revolution as their season starts this week. Saturday is the season opener. We'll be getting to some Revs thoughts on today's program. But guest Friday will be going more in depth on them later this week. I want to say thanks to Derek Welch for coming on guest Friday last week. I'm talking some Celtics. Great conversation about where the Celtics are, kind of the halfway point. So if you have not listened to that, you can go ahead and listen to that if you have not. So yeah, looking forward to today's program. Got a good amount of stuff with all the local teams. Got some small items for a couple teams, but I think, clearly the big news is last week, is with the Red Sox. So I figured that that's probably where we're going to start today. I think it's going to be majority Red Sox today. I think with, the Celtics being on the All-Star break, the Bruins still have been off. Not a whole lot to get to for both of those, but I've got some Patriots thoughts as well. So I think for me with the Red Sox, obviously we, have spoken at length, I think, in the last couple of weeks about the Red Sox potentially looking to add another right-handed bat. And I think, for weeks talking about the Bregman possibility, the possibility of Nolan Arenado, and obviously Red Sox finally got something done with Alex Bregman last week, signing him to a 3-year deal worth $120 million, $40 million per season. They're opt-outs after the first season and the second season. So, I think good deal. I think it made a lot of sense. I think for the Red Sox to not give him a long-term deal. Obviously giving him 40 million per season is a lot, but I think with the Red Sox and their timeline with, Christian Campbell and some of the younger guys, I think a 3-year deal made a lot of sense with, opt-outs that could even happen after the first year. So, it's not like they're locked in to 6 years of him at 31 years old. So I think love the signing, love the deal. I think that we've talked at length on this program about the positives about bringing in somebody like him, with his ability to hit, especially at Fenway Park, being a right-handed bat in the Red Sox lineup, that would fit. Has the great success at Fenway throughout his career. Gives you good defense, really good defense, and I think that wherever he's going to play in the infield, obviously we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but is going to make your defense better. And I think hopefully if you have a guy like Story that's healthy for the whole season, those two guys going to make your infield a lot better defensively. And then also you add in the leadership too. He's won a couple of World Series with, or just one World Series with the Astros. One or two, I can't remember. Anyway, a guy that's experienced and has good leadership and knows what it's like to be on a winning team, and I think plays the game the right way, is a winning player, and I think will give the Red Sox like locker room and like organization more, not that there wasn't professionalism, but I think bringing in somebody that's a proven winner and a proven player in Major League Baseball for years. And so I think there's so many things to like about this. And I also just think from a standpoint of the front office finally making a move for a right-handed bat that, balances out the lineup a lot better. It's just great to see that they were able to get something like this across the finish line. So you can look at the offseason and say, okay, they went into it saying, okay, we need to upgrade the pitching staff, which they did. Upgrade the bullpen, which they did, and add another right-handed bat, which they did. And so I think it's, you can feel positive about that. You don't have to say, oh my gosh, here they went into the offseason, losing a guy like Tyler O'Neill, not replacing him, and being like, okay, we have to figure it out with a couple young guys that you really don't know much about. So the signing makes a lot of sense. I thought it really was the right thing to do, you know, to get this done, that, again, you're not locked into 6 or 7 years of a guy that's 31 years old. And I think, you know, worst case scenario, he's here for a year, has a really good season, you know, hits 30 home runs, goes back on the market, gets a longer deal. You know, I feel like that's a possibility. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, what his season looks like this season. What do the Red Sox think about him beyond this season? You know, that will be interesting. But I think the here and now, he makes the team better. And I think that's the most important thing. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, really exciting part. He's got a good relationship with Alex Cora, which I think counts for something around here. You know, I think it's always good when you have a manager that, you know, can connect with his guys. And I feel like, you know, Alex Cora has always been a popular guy in this organization. So I feel like that's positive, you know, that he's a good players coach and guys enjoy playing for him. So, you know, I think that's another positive. I think, you know, yes, there's a lot of stuff that came out yesterday with, you know, the Devers press conference that, you know, everybody's talking about, and, you know, his talking about that he wants to be a third baseman, that that's what he's here to play. And, you know, I think on one hand, I'm happy that he's speaking up like this, and, you know, he's a proud guy. And I think that that's, you know, came across yesterday. And I think that's good, because it shows that he has passion and he cares, you know. And I think is prideful in a way that, like, he's not just going to be a pushover and be like, oh, I'm going to allow this new guy to come in, play third base. You know, I mean, obviously you want the team, him and the team, to be able to work it out, so, you know, things aren't uncomfortable. But I think something like this is just going to blow over. I'm not really concerned that this is going to become an issue. You know, I think at the end of the day, both Devers and Bregman will realize that they'll do what's best for the team. Not that, like, there's going to be issues between them. I don't think so, because I think they're both professional guys. I don't think this will become an issue, but, you know, I think it's just one of those things that I think Devers is, you know, a proud guy, as I said, and, you know, wants to say that, like, hey, I still want to play third base. I still want that position. You know, I think what's better for the team, I think, in my personal opinion, it's probably better that he DHs, because, you know, he's had issues with his defense. And, you know, I appreciate that he wants to stick there and wants to, you know, get better defensively and, you know, not give up his spot. And I get that. But I feel like, you know, Bregman is very clearly better suited to play third base. Now, I'm not saying that that's what has to happen, because I think the way I looked at it throughout this offseason is that Bregman was going to play second base. I think I just thought that that was assumed. You know, I think if I'm looking at it from a standpoint of who's a better third baseman defensively, it's probably Bregman. But I kind of thought that he'd be the guy to play second base. And it could be that the Red Sox are really bullish on Christian Campbell, and they really want him to make the team, and they want him to be the everyday second baseman. I think, you know, there is kind of an issue that I have, where I feel like you would think with, you know, ownership looking into bringing in, you know, a Bregman or an Arenado, both of those guys are third basemen, I don't know, you would think that there would be a better communication effort between them and Devers in terms of, you know, what was going to happen. And maybe there has been, and maybe he's just been very adamant that he doesn't want a DH and, you know, wants to stay at third, which I respect, you know, as I've said a couple times now. But, you know, I think what's best for the team will be what's best for the team. And I have confidence that Alex Cora and that group of players are going to be able to work it out. You know, I think it's a long way before the season starts. We're a month away, you know, spring training has started. Games start this weekend. Sure, it'll be something that people are going to talk about ad nauseum, but I don't think I'm really, overly concerned with the comments that Devers made. I think that people might be making a larger deal out of it than, what needs to be made. So, sure, it'll be interesting to see, what the Red Sox do at second base. Is Campbell there? Vaughn Grissom, is Bregman going to be there? Or is he going to get most of the work at third base? I think it'll be interesting to see. I think it is interesting that, Yoshida is still working back from the shoulder procedure. So, maybe he starts the season on the injured list and gives the Red Sox the ability to put Devers or somebody at designated hitter. But I think then once he gets healthy and comes back, they're really going to have to, figure out what they're going to have to do. So, I think the other notes, Brian Baio, Cutter Crawford, I think dealing with, don't want to say injuries, but I think dealing with some soreness, Crawford with his knee, and Baio, I think, has some shoulder soreness. So, I think just something to watch at the start of spring training. I think at the end of the day, spring training is never really about results, kind of just like how guys are doing. And so I think that'll be interesting to watch. I do think that the Red Sox, thanks to some of the signings and the players that they brought in, that they're in a pretty good spot depth-wise. If somebody like Crawford has to start the season on the injured list, they can call upon a Richard Fitz, a Quinn Priester, Cooper Criswell. They can have any of those guys be available to throw some innings, if they need to. So I think that I'm not super concerned about, but I think just something to monitor. Obviously, we'll be monitoring the progress of, Campbell, Marcelo Meyer, and Roman Anthony, just to see how they do in spring training. And then I think there are guys like Vaughn Grissom that I'm curious to see what spring training looks like for him. I do feel like, not that he's on borrowed time, but I think he's really going to have a really good spring if he's going to stay around the organization. But I think other than that, I think the guys on the team are going to be pretty set. Casas will be at first, Story will be at shortstop. They'll figure out, third base, but then it's Duran, Abreu, and gosh, who's the other? Seiran Rafaela. So, you would think those guys will be the outfield guys. Ref Snyder will be around again. So, but then, where does Anthony factor in? Does he factor in? Does he blow the team away with a good spring training? Does he make it difficult for the Red Sox to, have him start the season, in Worcester? So I think those are some things to watch for sure. But yeah, it's pretty hard to believe that spring training games will start this weekend. Red Sox will play their annual game against Northeastern on Friday, and then they will start Grapefruit League play on Saturday against Tampa Bay, I believe is their first spring training game. And then they will start with games next week. Or so yeah, two games over the weekend, Tampa Bay and Toronto. And then they will play the Yankees on Monday. So we'll get a couple games in before next week's program, I would think. I think that probably going to do it for the Red Sox. I don't think I had any other things that I was going to get to. It is interesting, I know this doesn't mean anything, but you look on ESPN and you look at the depth chart, they do have Alex Bregman listed at second base, which is kind of what my expectation is going to be. I think that's what I think is going to end up happening. Bregman obviously is going to be, I would think, play a different position, but I think he's not somebody that I think I'm super concerned about in terms of picking up a new position. I do feel like maybe there'll be some growing pains, but I do feel like this infield defense will be a lot better than it was last season. And it may just be, if Story's healthy and in there, I think just automatically makes that infield a lot better than you add in Bregman, who, yes, obviously is a gold glover at third base, but I think second base shouldn't be something that would be too difficult for him to pick up. But I think it'll be interesting to see with Yoshida especially, you know, how does that factor in to how they start the season? Does that have an effect on the third base situation? Controversy, it's not really a controversy, I wouldn't call it that yet, but they think, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how he factors in to all that. So yeah, I think that's going to do it for the Red Sox. We're going to move on, talk a little Celtics. I don't know if it makes sense to really kind of go through the two games that they played last week, wins against the Heat and the Spurs. You know, I think they were, you know, started kind of cold against the Heat, but then picked it up the rest of the game. You know, Jason Tatum was outstanding. Again, Peyton Pritchard was really good, had 8 assists. You know, he's somebody that Derek Welch and I talked about at length last week on Guest Friday, that we were really, you know, been impressed with him this season. I think just for me, it's not necessarily, you know, what he can do shooting the ball and what he can do offensively. You know, we know how good he can be. You know, we know how good he can be with the three-point shooting and getting to the basket and, yes, knocking down those, you know, half-court shots and whatnot. But I think I've been really impressed with the other parts of his game that have improved. He's an outstanding rebounder for a guy his size. I mean, how many moments in games do you remember, or can you point to where he's the smallest guy on the floor getting offensive rebounds like it's nothing? So, you know, that part of his game has really improved. But then also his playmaking. He had 8 assists on Monday against the Heat. Had 6 assists in that Dallas game. Now I know that was kind of a weird throwaway game because he was playing a lot with the backups in the fourth quarter when the Celtics made a comeback that ultimately fell short. But I thought he was really, really good against the Heat. You know, 8 assists. Didn't shoot it particularly well, but I think a guy that can impact the game in so many different ways. And I just think that makes this team that much more dangerous when you can rely on a guy like Pritchard coming off the bench, giving you that spark, sometimes offensively when he's knocking down 4 or 5 threes, but he can also impact the game in other ways with his rebounding, with his playmaking. And I think that's just great to have somebody like that off the bench where it's like, okay, maybe you can go through stretches where the team's struggling for offense, struggling for energy, and he's a guy that can just come in and give you some really good minutes. So that was a really good game for him. Tatum was really good again against the Heat. You know, I feel like he really, you know, kept his foot on the gas in the last couple games before the break, you know, with the 3-game winning streak with the wins over the Knicks, the Heat, and the Spurs. He was really good against the Spurs again, 32 points, 14 rebounds, and I think is, you know, just consistently, I think, has consistently been the best player on the floor when you've watched all these games that the Celtics have played, and some against some quality opponents like the Knicks and the Cavaliers. But I think it's just very clear that he's the best player on the floor. And, you know, I think it's funny, you know, Derek and I talking about this last week, that it still just feels like across the league, he still doesn't get the, like, appreciation. And, you know, who knows what that is? Could be a Boston thing. You know, I feel like that's kind of what it is. I don't want to be biased and say that, but I do feel like we're seeing a player really just be at his best in everything that he does, not just the shooting, not just the scoring, but the rebounding, the affecting the game with his defense, with his playmaking sometimes. You know, had 11 assists in that game against the Sixers a couple weeks ago. 7 assists in that game against the Cavaliers, also led the Celtics in scoring in both of those games. You know, had the 40-point game against the Knicks where he was, I think, played his best game of the season, and then followed it up with 33 points against the Heat and then 32 points against the Spurs. So playing at a really high level, I think the Celtics came into the All-Star break playing their best basketball this season. And I think returning back to the team that started the season, 20 and 4, 20 and 5, the team that started the season 20 and 5, and not like the team that, went through that malaise in December and January. Now it feels like they really were hitting their stride. Obviously, we'll see what happens when they come back, from the break with the 8 days off where they play the Sixers in Philadelphia Thursday night. That'll be their first game back from the All-Star break, and then they'll have a home game against the Knicks Sunday at 1 o'clock. So those are their next two games. So, I think spread out pretty well, which is good, but I think it'll be interesting to see how they come back out of the break, against Philadelphia, obviously a team that's not very good, but then a marquee matchup against the Knicks. They'll also have another game against the Cavaliers on February 28th, last day of February. I'll actually be lucky enough to be in attendance for that game. So that will be an interesting game to see. Denver as well is on the schedule in a couple weeks, as are the Lakers. So a couple of interesting matchups, I think, for the Celtics to, measure themselves against. But yeah, back at it against the Sixers Thursday at 7 p.m. That's a TNT game. And that is on the road. And then they'll be at home Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock start against the Knicks. So I think that's probably going to do it for the Celtics. There is a Bruins item that I did want to get to. And obviously, kind of unfortunate, but kind of does play into what I was going to talk about. So obviously, the Bruins have been off with the Four Nations face-off. I'm going to talk about that later in the program. But a thing I did want to get to was how great I thought Charlie McAvoy played in Saturday night's game against Team Canada. Team USA ended up winning 3-1. Was really, really good in that game. It was awesome to see him throw his weight around. Great to see that physicality. And I think it's something that I think we've kind of missed from him this season. I think it has a lot to do with, I think, the increased role that he's had. I think in terms of, having a new season, having a Zadorov, kind of a new defenseman, being without Lindholm for as long as they've been, I think we've not really seen him be as comfortable as we would like. But I think getting to see him, throw his body weight around was awesome to see, because it really felt like, that obviously that Team USA is so talented that he has the ability to kind of show off that kind of, what he's good at. And I just think, obviously, because the team's so talented, they have individual guys that can really focus on, what they're good at. So I thought that was awesome to see him, knock down that Connor McDavid a few times, lay a couple hits on Sidney Crosby. I think that was just awesome to see that, he's comfortable playing that sort of game. I think I selfishly, and we all probably would like to see him play that sort of game and be that kind of commanding, intimidating presence. Not that he has to go around knocking guys over constantly, but I do feel like sometimes he doesn't affect the game as strongly as he should. And I feel like, it's that stuff where it's like you watch him play and you just feel like, man, he could be so much better than he actually is. And it's not to say that he's not a good player or anything, but I feel like if he really pushed himself, he could be a guy that could be a easily top five defenseman in the league and maybe even win a Norris Trophy or two. But I just feel like sometimes you wish that he could be a little bit more assertive. And I think me personally, I'd like to see him more assertive on the offensive end because I think he's got some really good skills. But it was good to see him be able to, play that sort of way. Obviously, it stinks with the news this morning that he's dealing with some kind of infection. Calling it an upper body injury, it's kind of not really sure what the exact issue is, but that he won't play in the championship game between the US and Canada on Thursday, which is really too bad because I thought that he played a really excellent game on Saturday night. So, tough to see, but I think obviously want to be careful, want to be safe because, doesn't just mean a lot to Team USA. It means a lot to the Bruins too. And I think, want to make sure that he focuses on his health and, it doesn't become a larger issue. I don't think that it's a major issue, but I think, certainly they just want to be careful. I do think about how does that affect the Bruins going forward? Is this something that's going to keep him out for a period of time? Or is he okay? I feel like if he's going to be out for a long period of time, that might lean you more towards the Bruins really truly being a selling team and being like, okay, it just, it's not going to happen for us this year, which I think is what should be the mentality right now. But I think even more so if, McAvoy is going to be out for a period of time. So the Bruins will return back Saturday night against the Anaheim Ducks. That will be their first game back from the Four Nations faceoff. And then the Bruins will have, I believe, 7 games, including that one, before the trade deadline, which is March 7th, I believe. So the Bruins will have a 3-game homestand against Anaheim, Toronto, and the Islanders that they will play out of the break, and then they'll be on the road. Pittsburgh, Minnesota, they'll play. Got Nashville, they got Carolina, Tampa Bay as well in those games in and around the trade deadline. So I think there really wasn't much other Bruins things to cover, I think, other than the stuff about McAvoy that I wanted to get to. But I think that will do it for the Bruins. We're gonna get to a Patriots item that I was intending to talk about, and now it kind of seems like it may not make a whole lot of sense to talk about it, but there was some reports last week that the Patriots are going to be heavily interested in T. Higgins, but then there was news the other day that the Bengals are expected to franchise tag him for a second straight year. So, that might be out the window, which would really stink because I think he would be a good fit on this Patriots offense. Obviously there was news that Deebo Samuel requested a trade as well. That was around the Super Bowl. So, that could be a possibility for the Patriots as well. I think that looking in the trade market is never a bad idea. So, that will certainly be interesting to keep your eyes on, but I think this is a team that with all the draft capital, the number four overall pick, all the cap space that they really have an opportunity to kind of revamp this team, but maybe without T. Higgins. So I thought that was significant to talk about, but if the Patriots did have a chance to bring him in, I think that that would be a good idea, because I feel like outside of him, there's not really a lot of big, great options, on the free agent market. It's like, yeah, they could look at a Stephon Diggs, but I feel like I'm kind of not sure what he has left in the tank, respectfully. I know that he was pretty good for the Texans last year before suffering a torn ACL, but I do think I'm going to be curious to see what the Patriots can get out of a third season of Pop Douglas. Does Jalen Polk have a better season? I still hold out hope that, he can still be a decent receiver. Kayshon Booty obviously showed flashes last season. Obviously they're going to need more in that wide receiver room, but, just will not involve T. Higgins, I think. So I think and that's going to do it for the Patriots. We're going to talk some Revolution now as their season gets underway against Nashville SC on Saturday, 8:30 start. So the Revs will have their first game on the road. They will open their home account March 1st against the Columbus Crew at Gillette, 7:30 start. So yeah, that will be absolutely insane if you're going to those games in early March. Make sure you bundle up, but it'll be exciting to see how the Revs do to start the season. I think obviously a lot of changes on this year's team. You know, John Veneziano will be on later this week on Guest Friday to tell you more about the changes that the Revs have made and all the different guys that they've brought in. But I think the both of us are interested to see how the team will do this season. You know, bringing in Alex Bono and goal. You know, Ivicic is still on the team. I think still expected to be the starter, but that was one of the guys they brought in. You know, obviously we talked about Jackson Yule that they brought in off season. And then kind of adding to some of the other kind of attacking guys with, you know, Carlos Hield, Noel Buck, and Shankly. You know, they brought in Leo Campana from Inter Miami. So I'd be interested to see what he can do. You know, I think that's kind of what I'm most curious about this team, is their, you know, ability to score goals. Because I feel like that was kind of the big issue last year. So, you know, hopefully some of the new guys they bring in, they'll be excited about. Langone, I'm curious to see how he does. I thought he did pretty well in his limited time last year coming over from Argentina. So curious to see what he can do. And then there are a bunch of other new guys as well that, you know, curious to see how they do. But yeah, looking forward to Guest Friday. Later this week, we'll talk more about the Revolution and what to expect from them. But I do feel like bringing in some proven talent was definitely a good move on Caleb Porter's part. And I think you can expect, my opinion, I think you can expect them to be a pretty good team this year and challenge, you know, hopefully for a playoff spot and, you know, get this team back to contending where I think they ought to be perfectly honest. So be exciting with the new season starting Saturday night in Nashville, 8:30 start, as the Revs will start their 2025 season. So I think it's going to do it for all the local teams. Really wish we had more to get to, but I just think with the timing of the Bruins and the Celtics, you know, being on break, really wasn't a whole lot to get to. But we'll get to some notes from around the sports world. The NBA All-Star Tournament took place this weekend, or All-Star Weekend was this past weekend, which I think, you know, I appreciate that they tried the new format with, you know, the four teams in the tournament. You know, I think it's, unfortunately, I just think this day and age, there's really no way to get it right. Unfortunately, you know, I think because it's at the end of the day, like, yes, you want to try to have guys be competitive, but it's kind of like you've seen, you know, how it's kind of difficult to do that. And even with the new format, they still felt like guys maybe didn't try as much as they could have. You know, it was kind of interesting to see, you know, with some of those games and with the lower score or the, you know, target score. I like that idea, obviously, but, you know, I think just hard to get guys to really compete defensively. But the OG team that was drafted by Shaquille O'Neal won the All-Star tournament. Steph Curry leading the team to a win and captured his second All-Star game MVP. There also was an idea that was brought up in terms of the USA versus the world, which may not be a bad idea. You know, that could be an interesting idea. I just think, like, I don't think that there's a perfect fix for this. You know, I think All-Star Weekend has just become what it's become. And, you know, for whatever reason, guys just aren't taking it as seriously. You know, I did think the dunk contest wasn't half bad. Still don't understand why, like, you know, the top players won't do it. Still doesn't really make sense. Still doesn't really make sense to me, but, you know, I thought it wasn't bad. You know, Mac McClung won for the third year in a row, but it's just like, really, we have a G League guy that comes in to win it like nobody else wants to do it. Just is kind of strange to me. And I just felt like It was awesome last year to see Jaylen Brown just participate in it. Didn't win, doesn't really matter, but it's just like good to see a kind of star player be like, yeah, I want to do this. So I don't know. I would like to see, star players do it. I don't think they ever will, unfortunately, but I didn't think it was all that bad this year. Tyler Hero won the 3-point contest as well. And yeah, Anthony Edwards and LeBron did not play in the All-Star game. It was notable for both of those as LeBron had played in 20 consecutive All-Star games. So the NBA regular season will start again tomorrow night. There's a 10 o'clock game between the Lakers and the Hornets. Then the rest of the league starts or starts again Thursday night. Celtics will play against the Sixers. So they're just going to run through the standings really quickly. Cavaliers still up by 5.5 on the Celtics for first place in the East. And then Oklahoma City, an 8-game lead over the Memphis Grizzlies for first place out in the West. So it's the Thunder and the Cavaliers on top of the respective conferences, both at 44 and 10. Celtics still 5.5 back of Cleveland, do have that head-to-head game coming up in a couple of weeks. So I think we're going to get to some NHL. We're actually going to talk four nations here. So Team USA, Team Canada will play in the championship Thursday night as both teams making it through. Team USA losing to Sweden yesterday, but they had already clinched a spot in the championship. So get to see US Canada again Thursday night, 8 o'clock start now at the Garden. The two games that were at the Garden yesterday, Team Canada holding off a late rally by Team Finland to win 5-3. So it'll be Team USA, Team Canada with, see what happens in this game. There was quite a lot of, physical play and quite a start to the last game with the three fights in 9 seconds. I thought that was quite a start to a game. I think one of the more entertaining hockey games that I've seen in quite a few years. So I thought, that was awesome to see. But I think, it wasn't just those games. Finland with an OT win over Sweden on Saturday, that was a, I thought that was a pretty good game. And then obviously the US-Canada game was great. And then the Canada-Sweden game, the first game of the tournament that went to overtime. So it wasn't just Team USA and Team Canada that, had good games. I think that it really has been a success. Great to see the best on best hockey and getting to see, I think, certain guys, flourish in different roles. And I think just to, take the McAvoy example of like, okay, you can see how he can play with like all that talent around him. Now, obviously, it's not realistic in an NHL context to have one team with that much talent, but just is really interesting to see, that each, it's like each of those guys, you can get to see what they're good at. So it was really cool to see, McAvoy with those big hits, Jake Guentzel to score a couple goals in that US Canada game. Dylan Larkin obviously had a goal in that game as well. So I think just really cool to see different guys get different opportunities. Jake Oettinger got a chance to be in goal last night. Would have liked Jeremy Swayman to get an opportunity to get into a game, but I think just really cool to have the opportunity. Somebody like Chris Kreider, Massachusetts native, sat out the first two games, was inserted into the lineup last night, scored 35 seconds in, which was a really cool moment for him. So I think just tournament's been awesome just to see different guys. The US guys get different opportunities. Matt Boldy, great to see him score a goal in the US's first game. Also a Massachusetts native. So just I think some really cool moments and hopefully Hopefully we get to see some more cool moments Thursday night in the championship game. So that will definitely be exciting to watch. And then the NHL kicks back off on Saturday with 14 games. The Bruins will play the Ducks. So I think it's going to do it for the NHL. We're going to move on, talk some MLB. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Blue Jays failing to reach contract extension. So in all likelihood, may reach free agency next summer. Next offseason, Red Sox are, I think, one of those teams that would be rumored to be interested. I think there was also some news this morning about a free agent that signed. Justin Turner agreeing to a one-year deal with the Cubs. That's what I had seen. So, you know, spring training obviously in full swing now with teams, you know, starting games this week. Red Sox will have their first game, unofficial game, Friday. And then Saturday will be their first game against the Tampa Bay Rays, if you're interested in watching those games. You know, I think it will be interesting to pay attention to, you know, some of the games for certain guys. So just some NFL notes here. The Bengals are aiming to retain their three star players, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Trey Hendrickson. And the Dolphins releasing Raheem Mostert last week. So he becomes a free agent, maybe an interesting potential guy for the Patriots. I could see the Patriots bringing in another running back, maybe a pass catcher or something. But actually, now that I think of it, Mostert's not as much a pass catching guy. But I could see the Patriots targeting somebody like that, considering Josh McDaniels will be running the offense. Do they look for a Shane Vereen, James White type of player? So I think that would be kind of a low-key thing that I would be interested in paying attention to if I was a Patriots fan. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week, although we do have a sports-themed top five for you guys this week. I think you'll really enjoy this one. So I was brainstorming with a few friends last night in terms of some ideas, and we were talking about, you know, sports movies, baseball movies, and I figured that a good place to go would be documentary films. Now ESPN has the, you know, legendary 30 for 30 films that they've been releasing for years that are absolutely outstanding, and I think me as a sports junkie just really love those films. So if you've been lucky enough to check those out, you know what I'm talking about, that they are just some great sports documentaries and, you know, do a great job of educating people on, you know, all kinds of sports stories that maybe you don't think of. But I think that's a good top five to do this week. Now, I'm just going to say it as a disclaimer, it's pretty much impossible for me to, you know, rank these like 1 to 5. So this is basically just going to be listing five that I really, really like, listing a couple of honorable mentions, and there are countless others. If you have the ability to check any of them out, I highly recommend that you check out all of these if you're a sports fan. So I think with us, you know, leading off talking about the Red Sox today, I figured that this is the best documentary to start with. 4 days in October, so it's about the Red Sox and Yankees series, the 2004 ALCS, about the comeback the Red Sox had. And it's just, you know, obviously I'm so biased as a New England fan, as a Red Sox fan. And, you know, most people listening to this, I would think, are Boston fans, that, you know, one of my favorite documentaries of all time, one of my favorite films just of all time. So a really cool in-depth look at that series. You know, obviously that series has been, you know, recounted millions of times. You know, there's this great Netflix documentary that talked about the 2004 Red Sox season that goes into that series in great detail. But I think this was just a great documentary. You know, I think the thing that I think is cool for me is there's, you know, throughout the documentary, it's Bill Simmons and Lenny Clark, you know, talking about their accounts of watching those games. And it's just like so fun to watch that because it brings back memories of me, you know, watching those games when I was a young kid, not really even realizing the significance of those games. So it just such a great film. You can put it on literally at any time. Never gets old. I think I've watched it about 10 times, and I'd be happy to watch it another 10 times. So I think that's definitely my favorite one. I also really enjoy, so I'm going to do five here. The second one is The U, which is about the University of Miami football team and talking about their kind of rise to prominence in the 1980s. There's also a part two, which is pretty interesting in and of itself, but I think the first part is most interesting to me, just to see the rise of that program, and it's pretty wild. If you kind of know anything about that team, that they're kind of a team that's known to kind of skirt the rules, so to speak, but really entertaining documentary. A lot of, you know, legendary players that came through that organization. So really like that one. And then number three, I have Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. Probably the most entertaining documentary of this of the 30 for 30 series. Covers Reggie Miller in the playoff series between the Knicks and the Pacers. There, I think, covers a couple years of the rivalry between those two teams. Really just awesome film. Gives you a deep appreciation for the competitor that Reggie Miller is. So I thought that was it's an outstanding one. I love watching that one all the time. You know, just the different accounts of different people that were involved in those games. So I would say definitely that one. Bad Boys is also really good. The story about the Detroit Pistons teams from 1989, 1990 team that won back-to-back titles and definitely were a thorn in the side for a number of different teams, you know, including kind of the late 80s Celtics and the early 90s Bulls. Really, really like that film. Just a really, really good, you know, NBA film to watch. And, you know, I think some of you that might be, you know, old enough to remember the 80s Celtics teams, you probably hated the Pistons, but I really, really like that documentary as well. And then there is number five, This Magic Moment, about Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway on the 1990s Orlando Magic. Also covers kind of the beginning of the Magic as an expansion franchise. Really, really like that one as well. And then some honorable mentions, Celtics Lakers Best of Enemies. This was a three-part one that a lot of people probably have seen. Really, really like that one as well. One and Not Done, the story about John Calipari as a basketball coach and recruiter. Really like that one. Kind of made me appreciate him as a basketball coach and a person. So really recommend that one. There's a great Bo Jackson one, Bo Knows. That one's really, really good. You know, the Fab Five. Although that's not technically a 30 for 30, but that is an ESPN film. Definitely highly recommend that one. And then there's a great, another ESPN Films one, Roll Tide, War Eagle, about the rivalry between Auburn and Alabama. Really like that one. A great, you know, football rivalry, a rivalry in the South. Really, really like that one. So, you know, there are countless of great ones, and I'm probably forgetting a good amount of them, but definitely if you have the ability to go check out all the ones that I've talked about. And then you might find some other ones as well. So I figured that was a good top five to go through this week. So I think that's probably going to do it for me this week. Great to be back. We'll be back later, guest Friday later this week. John Veneziano will be back as we'll talk Revolution, get into a season preview. So looking forward to that. So we will talk to you then.